News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Somebody to congratulate for those tickets that we just gave away?
We do need to congratulate someone. And Ron picking up a pair of tickets to see Kevin Cronin Band, the voice and songs of REO Speedwagon, coming to the Sanger Theater in September. And I imagine this will be a heck of a show. So congratulations to Ron. And we'll be giving away tickets the rest of the week, including a big two-a-day giveaway coming up one of these next couple of days. So stay tuned, and your chance to win throughout the rest of the week right here on Mobile Mornings.
You're getting zanier by the moment. No. Two ticket giveaways in one day.
What's next? So how about next we interview someone who is already in the mix and running for the role of state auditor. He wants to be Alabama's next state auditor, taking over after Andrew Sorrell leaving the office. And Derek Chen, who made that announcement right here on FM Talk 106.5 on the Jeff Poor Show here recently, on with us this morning. Good morning, Derek. Thank you so much for coming on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate y'all having me on.
Derek, your story is very interesting. Now, you're running for auditor. You're pretty familiar in Republican circles, though our audience may not know you. Politicians do, for sure. You're only 27 years old, is that right?
Yes, sir.
So talk about, let's get to the backstory first of all. You were born out west, but you decided on your own that wasn't for you. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I've been a lifelong Republican, been a Republican all my life, and I was actually born and raised in Southern California. But I knew from fairly early on that, you know, I wanted to leave California and see different parts of the country. So went to college in Michigan. It's a private liberal arts college in West Michigan called Hope College. And when I was in Hope College, I knew I wanted to go to law school. And so the president of Hope College at the time, I was talking to him, and he said, you know, there's a school that I want you to go look at. I think you'd really like it. It's in Birmingham, Alabama, and it's called Samford University, and they got a great law school, and it's very similar to Hope College, except that Samford has graduate programs. So I said I'd love to visit. Went to the visit campus, and I just absolutely fell in love with the campus, fell in love with Birmingham, and went to law school at Samford University's Cumberland School of Law, and I knew early on that I wanted to spend the rest of my time in Alabama, mm-hmm. moving from California.
How was that, Derek? I mean, I imagine quite the culture shock, even though it's up there near Birmingham. Even Samford really has kind of a, at least on campus, a small town feel, and I imagine any city in Alabama would have a small town feel after coming out of Lower California. What were your thoughts on just the massive shift in culture once you moved this way?
Well, I just absolutely loved it because I always stuck out like a sore thumb philosophically in California, and I was glad to be amongst such a conservative state once I moved to Alabama, and I just felt right at home. And I got to tell you, the folks in Alabama have just been so welcoming and so kind. And I just really am glad that now I'm a proud resident of the great state of Alabama.
Derek Chen is running for state auditor here in the state of Alabama. So remind us, if you would, we've talked to Andrew Sorrell about this a little bit, but he's going to give up that job and you want it. Exactly what does the auditor do, and why do you think that you're right for the position?
Yeah, so the state auditor's office, under the Alabama Constitution and the Alabama Code's duties, are they audit physical state property with a market value of $500 or greater. So anything that's physical property that's owned by a state agency that is worth $500 or more is kept track of by the state auditor's office. So desks, chairs, sofas, anything, computers that a state agency owns, the auditor keeps track of. The auditor also sits on several boards, and they make an appointment for registrars in 66 of the 67 counties. The only county that the auditor does not get a registrar appointment in is Jefferson County, actually, the county that I live in, because of a quirk in the law where Jefferson County gets to appoint their own registrar through their own process. But in all other counties in the state of Alabama, the auditor gets an appointment to the Board of Registrars. And I think that's a very often overlooked but very important part of the job, just because the registrars are the only officials in the state of Alabama that have any authority to add anyone to the voter rolls or remove anybody from the voter rolls. And I think it's so important that we get folks there that are competent, qualified, and understand the importance of election integrity and understand the importance of the rule of law. And I think that it's really important for our folks to understand that only eligible U.S. citizens who are residents of the state of Alabama should ever be allowed to vote in Alabama's elections. Mm-hmm. No ifs, ands, or buts.
We're talking with Derek Chen, who's running to be the next state auditor of Alabama. And Derek, I remember really well Jim Ziegler, who held that office before Andrew Sorrell took it over. And I remember Ziegler fighting for his life, fighting for the life of that office as the legislature was wanting to do away with the position, with the office. And since Sorrell took over and took over that fight, he's been trying to kind of expand the authority of the state auditor's office, but I understand a lot of that has to be done legislatively. But, you know, another thing these last two auditors have had in common, Jim Ziegler and Andrew Sorrell, while they're not really similar in the way that they speak or anything like that, both are pretty good at playing the media in whatever way they want to get their message out there. Sure. Do you think you kind of could fill those shoes? Because I know that being in the auditor role, you have to let people know what it is you're doing and what you're looking into, because it's not maybe one of the top three or five positions in the state, but it's still fairly important. How do you think you could fill that role, and would you be similar to Sorrell in trying to expand the office's authority?
Sure. So I think that it's really important to have an open line of communication with the folks that you serve, because at the end of the day, elected officials work for the people. We're public servants, and we work for the people of Alabama. And it's important to keep them informed and use your platform in a good way and keep folks informed about what's going on in the state of Alabama. Mm-hmm.
You're 27 years old, drawn to politics, I guess probably even as a before you moved to Alabama, I would assume. What's the draw, and what do you bring to the table in terms of being ready to serve right away?
So I was been involved in politics since I was in college. I was chairman of the College Republicans. I was actually chairman of the College Republicans at a very interesting time. It was during the 2016 presidential election cycle, and I started off volunteering for President Trump's campaign during the primaries, and I lived in Michigan then. It was a very important swing state, and so I was really proud to volunteer and support President Trump back during the 2016 presidential primary cycle. And I just remember President Trump making his announcement and coming down the escalators at Trump Tower. And as soon as I heard his speech, I knew that was the candidate that I was for. And I was on the Trump train from the very beginning.
Wow. So you would have been a teenager around that time, right? You were into politics relatively young.
Yes. So that was actually, President Trump was the very first person that I got to vote for, and was very proud of that. He was the very first person that I got to vote for in the 2016 Republican primary.
Would you say that you're is it a friendship now you have with Donald Trump? He's aware of you. You've been to Mar-a-Lago. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've always been a supporter of President Trump, and privileged to be able to go to Mar-a-Lago. I am a strong believer in President Trump and his America First agenda, And I think it's so important. I think as my family immigrated to the U.S. from Taiwan and had to go through the legal process and legally immigrated from Taiwan. And I think President Trump's policies on supporting legal immigration and combating illegal immigration was so important to me, because I think that it's so unfair when folks do it the right way and go through the legal process. Mm-hmm. It's unfair to let folks skip the line.
We're talking with Derek Chen, who's running for state auditor, and just a couple questions left. We'll let you leave us with kind of a final message for voters here. But, you know, it's kind of out of fashion these days, and you can thank Trump, out of fashion to be a career politician. And while I know you're getting started at a young age here, you did go to law school, went to a couple pretty prestigious law schools in our state. Talk a little bit about, I guess, your background, as far as I've seen, you described as a businessman, and of course you have this law degree. Tell us a little bit about kind of your work here in the real world.
Yeah, so I practice law in Jefferson County, mainly focused on trust and estates, and I set up shop right after I graduated law school. During this time, I've been active in a volunteer capacity with several conservative groups, Republican groups, and as an attorney. And my business background, I also have an MBA from the University of Alabama. And I figured with my law and business background that I'd be able to be effective in this role as state auditor, and that I'd be able to do a good job and contribute to my fellow citizens here in Alabama.
And I can imagine that you've traveled a good bit in, you know, your early life from Michigan, from California to Alabama. So getting on the road's no big deal for you. I guess you'll be traveling the state come real soon, huh?
Yes, and I've already done so. I have been fortunate to be able to travel all over the state of Alabama, and I've just really enjoyed getting to meet folks and look forward to continuing to take my message of government accountability and transparency and efficiency to the people of Alabama.
And Derek, we've enjoyed getting to know you this morning as well, and you might have just kind of done it, but any final message here for voters as we look at this election here coming up next year, and you're one of the first in the mix here for state auditor, what kind of message do you want to leave folks with this morning?
I would just like to say that to your audience that it's so important for us as Alabamians to remember that any public office holder here works for you, and it's so important that we, as elected officials, as public officials, that we look after your property like we would look after our own. At the end of the day, our state. Our taxpayers' resources do not belong to any bureaucrat, do not belong to any politician in Montgomery. It belongs to we the people, and I look forward to bringing that perspective to Montgomery.
We look forward to meeting you face-to-face, Derek, on your campaign travels. Have yourself a good day, okay?
Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure. Appreciate y'all having me.
All right. Derek Chen, running for state auditor. And your texts on the way next. Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. Let us know what you're thinking about this morning, what's on your mind. We have a lot we can get into, from the Trump rally yesterday in Michigan to a lot of our three big things this morning focused on local crime and how law enforcement and the city plan to respond. Coming back, more Mobile Mornings right after the WKRG news break. Thanks, Kane. 825 coming to the text line, 251-343-0106. After I tell you about Underdog Fantasy, and man, it has been busy. As an underdog player, it has been busy stretch of weeks here with the playoffs going on. Sometimes, I mean, last week, 8 games between basketball and hockey. And Underdog is one of the best places to make entries during the playoffs, especially with the basketball playoffs, with their extender promo. And with the extender promo, you can play your way to increasingly bigger boosts, bigger payouts each round of the playoffs. You start a playoff series by using your game one boost and then continue boosting each game that comes after that to unlock the next one. And the longer the series goes on, the bigger the boosts. Underdog is a leading place to make all of your sports selections. And something I've been asked a ton of times since I started talking about it, can you play in Alabama? Yes, and I have been for some time now. Underdog is one of the fastest-growing sports game apps. Millions of fans have already won billions making plays on Underdog, and you could be next. To play, it's really easy. Once you download the Underdog Fantasy app and put in that promo code Dalton, once you start making your entry, you just choose whether a player will go higher or lower on one of their stats. In basketball, you'd be choosing from stats like points, assists, and rebounds. And they have all of your favorite leagues and teams, players, stars to choose from. So you can mix and match on your entry and have different players from different sports, or they can be from the same sport and just different teams. But the more players you add to that entry, the more money you could win if you guess correctly. Download the Underdog Fantasy app, use the promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and you'll unlock a special offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash when you make that first deposit. It's the promo code Dalton. Must be 19 plus in Alabama and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply, and if you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
To the Mallory Piping text line, Dio and Peachy. I like that. Just want to say thank you for helping me get to work each morning. Also making Sunday night not so crappy, since I know Monday morning you guys will have something interesting to tell me. Very nice.
Thanks,
little.
Josh.
Also, yeah. See, Jaybird says, who does Dalton have at the Derby? So they want to bet along with you.
It's kind of embarrassing how little I've been paying attention to the horse racing world this year. I'm usually really fired up and know about the horses come Derby time. So I was just looking at the post positions and the names really for the first time, and a few names that stick out to me.
Yep.
Well, the favorite is Journalism, believe it or not. That's the name of the horse, Journalism, at 3-1 odds. That would have been an instant pick for me back in the day, but no longer. Journalism, just as a profession, kind of being looked down upon right now. But I see Bob Baffert back in the mix here. Remember, he kind of was banned for a little bit. He has, it looks like, one horse running. Citizen Bull, who got the inside lane at 20-1 odds. I don't know, Dan. I haven't really looked into this, but that seems like a pretty good shot to me. But there's some good names. Sandman, Chunk of Gold, American Promise, some good names here. Final Gambit, that one's drawing some bets too at 30-1 odds. So maybe we'll look into that a little further, a little closer to the Derby on Saturday.
Any horse named after a chunk of anything, do you think would be fastest horse in the race?
You know, everyone will be looking at the full 21 horse field, but just the battle between Chunk of Gold and Coal Battle.
Oh,
that might be pretty good.
Yeah,
as we talk minerals,
digging them up,
and precious metals.
It's this Saturday, so this is Derby week up in Louisville. The Kentucky Derby, 151st Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May the 3rd. So here it comes.
And I don't know how many of you will remember that interview we just had with Derek Chen. I'm sure we'll have him on again by the time before we head to the polls in 2026, but he's picked up a couple votes here in 2025. Irish Indian says, the Irish Indian may be voting for Derek from Taiwan. Now, Derek's parents are from Taiwan. Derek is an American, born in America, from America. But Irish Indian says he has his vote. And Joel in Summerdale, I think he was trying to say, he was trying to say he's got my vote. He said he's got my throat. We understand what you were trying to say there, Joel.
Got my throat.
That's what Joel wrote. But then he said he's got my vote.
Oh.
So there you go, picking up a couple votes.
Even a throat. You got a throat.
And a throat, that's right. More from the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106 on the way.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835. Thanks again to Derek Chen, who is running, I guess he'll be in the Republican primary, first of all, for state auditor. Guest of ours in the little after 8 o'clock this morning. Mallory Piping text line and also phone line. We don't give him enough credit for that, do we?
We don't. We love talking on the phone.
Eliza would like to talk to us. Eliza, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Dalton. How are you both?
Hey, we're great. How are you?
Good. I just want to say I really appreciate you bringing Derek Chen on. I think it really helps us to see and know the stories, the backgrounds, and the point of view of our local and state candidates. I really relate to Derek Chen because I also grew up in Southern California. I'm a Millville transplant. I grew up in Orange County, which is a conservative county in Southern California, and it's good to have that perspective. He definitely will be having my vote. So, and I completely relate to his value system that he has and that work ethic. That's really what it what really came through in the call was work ethic.
Yep.
You know, it's missing a lot.
Yeah, other people are missing him. Maybe he took theirs because he's 27 years old and he's already running for a statewide office.
Yes, and, you know, I think there's something to be said about, I'm a first-generation American as well, there's something to be said about seeing your parents work hard for everything. My father worked two full-time jobs for 44 years. That's 16 hours a day. He worked two full-time jobs put us in a position. Yes, to put us in a position to, you know, go to private Catholic school, move to a really good area. And so I think having someone like that in the auditor's office, someone who's willing to do the work, even though they're not technically quote unquote flashy, I think that's what we really need in Alabama. And I think that's the way forward.
Yeah. And Eliza, I imagine just from this call, you can relate. He said, you know, first generation or second generation with the parents that moved to California. We talk about California and so many people just are like, oh, that's a liberal hellhole. But there's a lot it's a huge state, obviously, but a lot of conservative areas and maybe not as outspoken politically, but even just as the way of life, so many immigrants that came from civil wars or places where they were escaping communism that moved to California and don't have the maybe political views that people assume they have.
Right. I mean, people don't realize my grandfather actually was a World War II and Korean War vet through the U.S. Philippine Army Association. That's how he was able to get to America and kind of started this line here. So there's always been that line there. My father did his stint in the Navy. Mm-hmm. But people don't realize California is a farming community. It's agriculture. We are port cities as well.
Yeah.
We have a military there. There's a lot of conservatism in there. I mean, but you just have the biggest group being the loudest one, right, like in most places.
Yep. In the cities. Eliza, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate those kind words. Yeah.
Back to the Mallory Piping text line. Ken says, why do I feel like we're in a California PSYOP? Yeah, they're elbowing their way in, the Californians today. The conservative Californians calling in.
Yeah, both interesting. But that was cool, Eliza. Who would have known that backstory? She calls from time to time, so we know her in that way, but she had a lot to say.
Really good. Also, Tony Ann letting us know, as she does so often, what day it is. Today, there's an International Sexual Assault Awareness Event, Denim Day, International Sexual Assault Awareness. So thanks for that text, Tony Ann. 251-343-0106. You know, yesterday was such a big day. Well, it was a big day for the Trump administration, with it being day 100. You had that ABC News interview. It was combative, but I thought a really good little interview there last night. You also had Trump a couple different speeches. One in front of the Michigan National Guard, where the governor was there, Gretchen Whitmer. He pulled her back up there to speak some. And then he held in a more of a Trump-style campaign event in Michigan. And really talked about the auto industry and bringing jobs back to Michigan. And I thought, you know, it was classic Trump and maybe at a really good time for that administration, who's taking some hits in polling and other ways with all of these things they've rolled out in the first 100 days. I think him getting his message out there, you know, he has all these foot soldiers. He has the Lutnicks and the Mike Waltz and Bessent, less so for the Trump image. He's more talking just tariffs, but there's no better mouthpiece, at least in this case, than Trump himself. Mm-hmm. And having him out there and telling the people his plan, I don't know if they plan to wait until day 100 to get that really going again, or if it was out of necessity because of the polling, but I thought that was just such a smart move. But in addition to that, you have all this tariff stuff going on, and Amazon kind of entering the picture yesterday, some of the front page news, on a couple different stories. So first, this plan to display how tariffs were impacting the prices, not on the full Amazon website. At least that's how they portrayed the story after this big blow up in the media yesterday, but just on Amazon Haul. And I'm not really exactly, you know, there's so many different offshoots on the Amazon store. They have pharmacy, they have Prime, the video and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So Amazon Haul, I guess I just kind of assumed that was their answer to some of the cheap drop shippers out there and some of the cheap Chinese companies that are sending really, really cheap goods that can be bought up. Now, someone could correct me if that's not what Amazon Haul is. I imagine it's maybe like a clothing kind of site for Amazon. But anyway, it kind of started with the press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, talking about this some from the podium.
Yeah, she wasn't happy.
And this was after kind of the news came out that Amazon would start listing these tariff impacts on their prices. Here was Leavitt yesterday.
This is a hostile and political act by Amazon. Why didn't Amazon do this when the Biden administration hiked inflation to the highest level in 40 years?
Now, I actually like the idea of seeing why you're charging me what you're charging me. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if it's Amazon, Walmart, you know, where I'm happen to be eating at a restaurant or something like that. I'd love to see the breakdown. And I was kind of looking forward to seeing tariff breakdowns on Amazon. That way you could tell what's American and what's not, because right now there's no easy way to tell that. But I understand the administration upset because they're saying, hey, you didn't do this when prices went through the roof during the Biden administration. You didn't put the impact on inflation on there.
Yeah. Right. Which is legit, right? And so then Trump's not happy. So this all kind of unfolded like in phases yesterday, right? We were getting
unfolded
word.
Or unraveled.
Unraveled, maybe, yeah, because Trump, around the time that Leavitt spoke, Trump got on the phone and he gave a call to
Bezos.
Bezos. Yeah. This is Tom Galloway. He was talking with Gordon Deal earlier this morning about this story. So Trump gets on the phone and he kind of puts a kibosh to it.
As time passed, we later heard from Amazon officials who told us, no, in fact, there never were plans to list prices associated with tariffs. This was something under consideration by the company for its discounted Amazon website, but not something that they said they were ever going to execute. And so really, we kind of had a real back and forth between, you know, the second largest retailer in the U.S. behind Walmart and the White House, which, you know, ultimately the company decided to back off or at least deny the report after hearing directly from the president.
Yeah, so he calls Bezos. That's what's known as hearing directly from the president as he got on the phone right away. And he just, I guess in some way said, hey man, not cool. And everything kind of, you know, Amazon was either denying it was ever going to do it or they backtracked altogether, or I'm not sure how you see it, but in the end, Trump's will won out.
Yeah, here was Trump talking about it, his call to Bezos.
Jeff Bezos was very nice. He was terrific. He solved the problem very quickly. And he did the right thing.
So that was, you know, one part of the Amazon story yesterday. The other here is job losses at UPS because they are, in a way, disaffiliating somewhat from Amazon. And we had these stories coming out last year, or maybe even back in 2023, that FedEx had already kind of cut out a lot of their Amazon business from their plans. And then UPS announced much the same. And that's just because the profit on moving Amazon boxes around wasn't good enough for the game for UPS and FedEx. They wanted higher profit margins, and cutting Amazon out would do it for them. But they're also cutting out a lot of employees. And UPS announced they're going to cut 20,000 operational jobs this year and close 73 facilities to reduce costs. And you can thank this scaling back of deliveries for Amazon. That's been accounting for 12% of UPS's revenue. But from what I've read, their reasoning behind cutting out the Amazon business is because the profit margin just wasn't there. There were already 12,000 job cuts last year at UPS. They aim to save $3.5 billion through automation and network reconfiguration. But you have a huge battle brewing because the Teamsters Union, President Sean O'Brien, said they have a contract mandating that 30,000 Teamster positions stay on at UPS. They're trying to cut 20,000 jobs. I mean, something's got to break here as they try to move towards automation. And so that'll be an interesting fight to watch here coming forward. The Teamsters Union versus Amazon. We've already seen some of those union versus Amazon battles even right here in our own state. But that's something to keep an eye on for sure. Scooter texting on the Mallory Piping text line. Why are we even talking about the polls? We know from the past elections that the polls cannot be trusted. Well, I mentioned the polls there. I'm not ride or die with the polls and believe them as truth necessarily, but it's interesting restarting the Trump-style campaign rallies on day 100, and I think the polls, they don't tell the whole picture. I'm sensing from Trump voters, and maybe even especially Trump voters who were on the fence going into the election but decided to pull the poll for Trump then, that there is some unease. There's a lot of people wondering if they made the wrong decision. Not me, not a majority of Trump voters, but there are people saying, okay, what are we doing here? Because there seems like there's a lot of chaos going on. So I don't know if it was intentional or they had planned this from the get-go, that day 100 or thereabouts, Trump gets back out there and starts from his own mouth telling his story and what he's doing and why he's doing it to big crowds.
Well, here's why he has to do it. The legacy media is not doing it. The legacy media, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago? They couldn't wait to jump on with tariffs gone wrong, prices going up, stock market going down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those were their headlines and their talking points loud and clear.
Right.
Stock market's going way back up. Now, probably leveling off to where it was.
Seeing a lot less talk about it right now.
You're seeing no talk about it.
Yeah.
You're seeing no headlines about it. You're seeing no distribution of that story in any way. The headline, the comfortable one for them was when everything went to crap for a couple of, for a week and a half or so, that was their story. Mm-hmm. When things started bouncing back, that was not their story.
No, and chaos just became the story.
Chaos.
Oh, it's chaotic there at Hegseth's place. It's chaotic with Trump. And Bessent actually referenced that chaos yesterday, the Treasury Secretary, as he is way less panicked about this whole tariff war. Here's some of Scott Bessent, and then just before we go to the break and talk with Jeff, shift to Trump's message yesterday. Here's Bessent.
I think one thing that has been a little disconcerting for the markets is, you know, President Trump creates what I would call strategic uncertainty in the negotiations. I think the aperture of uncertainty will be narrowing, and as we start moving forward, announcing deals.
And Bessent loves talking about the narrowing of the aperture. Mm-hmm. I've heard him say that about 7 million times, and that might begin to narrow maybe today or whenever they officially announce this tariff deal with India. They will be the first one up.
That'll be the domino, maybe, huh?
That'll be the first domino. And then maybe South Korea following that, and then Japan. But yesterday, before his trip to Michigan, Trump was asked, okay, you've spent this first 100 days really focused on the border, on executive orders. Of course, you have this tariff battle and the peace deals talks, which are still ongoing. He said this next 100 days, his focus will be on maybe the bigger part, or at least a very important part of his whole plan here, is through Congress, keeping those 2017 tax cuts going, but also deregulation. He said he's going to spend these next 100 days focused on getting that bill through Congress.
I think the next period of time, I think my biggest focus will be on Congress with the deal that we're working on. That'll be the biggest bill in the history of our country in terms of tax cuts and regulation cuts and other things.
And so at that Michigan rally, he was really, Dan, hammering Republicans in Congress. And he was saying, I wouldn't, you know, unless they pass it. He started talking about what some folks have been theorizing, that Republicans, there's no way they get this bill through unless they raise taxes to 40% on the top income earners there. Trump yesterday at that rally making absolutely clear he is 100% against that, and that you should vote out anyone who tries to raise taxes, and was really going after the Republicans. But he was also kind of, with knowing his crowd so well, talking about the jobs that are coming back. Here was some from Trump at that rally in Michigan.
But I'm thrilled to be back in this beautiful state. I love this state. Got a lot of auto jobs coming. Watch what's happening. The companies are coming in by the tens. You got to see what's happening. They all want to come back to Michigan and build cars again. You know why? Because of our tax and tariff policy. They're coming from all over the world. They're coming up and they're opening up plants and they're talking to us all day and all night. They want to get here and they're coming in at levels you've never seen before. And I want to thank the auto workers for your support. That was great.
So just a snippet from the rally last night, but a big day in Trump land yesterday.
Wasn't it, though? It really was. And in the midst of all that, talking down Amazon, like that was not on his...
wasn't even on the top three yesterday.
On his agenda, yeah. And he made one phone call, got that all straightened out. He's a very capable man.
Yeah, I'd say so. 8:50, another capable radio host on the way at 9. That'll be Jeff Poor. We'll try to talk with him here before the show closes out here on Mobile Mornings.
What's going on, y'all? Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:55 on Mobile Mornings. Jeff Poor Show on the way. Get the package of tax cut bills that sailed through the Alabama House last month, but haven't really... Kind of stalled out in the Senate, I guess, at this point, but time's running out. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So did you travel once again to the State House? Is that where we're going to hear Jeff from this morning?
That's where you're hearing me from right now. Mm-hmm. So, and this is all untested equipment, so if it sounds a little janky, that's why.
Yeah, well, the State House has been tested, and it's poor for everybody's health. So just get out of there alive, if you would. So the $192 million in tax cuts, Jeff, where do we stand with this?
It's a good question. I was probably going to get through the Senate at some point. What happened yesterday in the Alabama Senate... Roger Smith has been, he ambushed lawmakers. That's the way I would describe it. Mm. They had them backed into a corner, the Democrats. They had figured out a way to overcome their filibusters. They had really like, okay, you know, we're going to cloture. We got a cloture strategy here that's going to keep you off the mic. Don't do this to us. And they said, okay, well, when they had a Birmingham Waterworks bill, which really would have turned the screws on them, all right, we got a gun to our head. It's time to negotiate. Mm-hmm. And Republicans are like, okay, yeah, it's about time you came around instead of just putting pedal to the metal.
Jeez.
And what they did last night, Roger Smitherman made them read the entire general fund budget. After filibustering and they shut him down, he made him read the entire budget. That took hours. It went all the way up to midnight last night, killed a bunch of good bills. So the Democrats, the Republicans think the Democrats will operate in good faith. It's just not true.
No. I think it's so interesting. A couple of different legislative actions yesterday. And if you would have told Republicans before this session that the Gulf of America bill would stall out in the Senate with Republican Jay Hovey voting against with the Democrats, but that they would get a Juneteenth state holiday bill all the way through, I think there'd be some Republicans wanting to know a little bit more before the session started. Like, how exactly? What's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Number one, I don't know what's going on with Jay Hovey and that vote, but it is... You know, he represents Auburn. He's the guy who beat Tom Watley by one vote during the last cycle. That's a district that's tough. A lot of retired professors are vote there. And it's just stuff like that is what you see. And the Juneteenth holiday, I think it had the governor's backing. So that had a little bit to do with it. And then these guys will give it to Governor Ivey. Hmm. I can't explain it, but that's sort of the calculus there.
We're running out of time. Just 30 seconds. Who are you looking forward to talking to on today's show?
We got Joey Clark warming up in the bullpen. We got Speaker Nathaniel Ledbetter right after that. Cynthia Allman, a lawmaker from Tuscaloosa. And then finally, Mark Shirey from West Mobile will be with us.
There's Jeff Ford in critical but stable condition.
Thank you for that, Dan.
Hang in there, buddy. Stay safe. And happy birthday yesterday, a day late.
Hey, thank you for that, too.
All right, that does it for Mobile Mornings Wednesday style. Tomorrow we'll try Thursday style at 6 a.m.
Okay.